Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 158 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and see for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Thursday, June 26, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a June 26, 2008, a Thursday, you're listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to phone in and participate or participate by email or by the chat room. I'll be telling you more about that in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it is there that you'll find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the past show. You'll find links there to the chat room, and there are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. I need to update those music links. You'll also find there links to Head On Radio Network's main site, and there you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as PayPal buttons to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. Your donations keep the packets passing and the hard drive fans and coolers and network cards all humming right along. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. And that's area code 304-658-3333. Again, if you have unlimited long distance, 304-658-3333 or toll-free 877-443-2366. I do try to keep track of the email, and we'll read your emails over the air, if at all possible, depending on what they say, of course. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. You'll find the link there to the chat room. The chat room is a great place to follow the show. The chat room's active during all of the live programming on the Head On Radio Network, and in fact, it's become a very important component of the program, this program, and all of the others. We post links that are of topic of the moment, and so you'll continually be updated and be in the company of some of the smartest people on the planet. Our guest this evening is Mr. Don Harvey. Now, Don Harvey is a difficult man to describe. He is quite unique. There is only one Don Harvey. You've actually heard Don Harvey's music on this show before. I
first came across Don Harvey, a music track called Queer Cowboys Lament a while back, and with his permission we ran it on the show, and amazing track, really. It's an actual authentic cowboy song, and as one writer points out, if you think it's easy to write a cowboy song in this day and age with email and instant messaging and the fast rate at which we live, if you think it's easy to write a genuine cowboy song, try it yourself. And I believe that writer was absolutely correct. Don is based in Washington, D.C., and is a bassist and a guitarist and a songwriter and a singer. Don is originally from Cleveland and started taking piano lessons when he was only a tiny young man of 8 years old. He then switched to Oregon, and then he dropped keyboards and took up the bass guitar in about 1965. He played in a band with his brother and some older guys for several years, and then when his brother left for college, he joined another band, and Don continued playing bass in rock bands in college and later in a country and western band in Austin, Texas, and more recently in a bluegrass group in the D.C. metro area. And after taking a break from music for several years, he joined up with some Cleveland musicians and recorded a studio CD called Mohawk Comb Over. Gotta love a title like that. And later he began writing and recording his own music and has just released a brand new CD, his first CD, called Good Clean Fun. And in fact, we'll be playing tracks from Good Clean Fun this evening. He's also performed in several Barrapalooza shows in the past year. Now, it's difficult to describe Good Clean Fun. Best I can tell you, there are odes of joy and sorrows of man-to-man sex and friendship and romance, and Don Harvey tells these yarns with honesty and simplicity. He's been described as a rocker, a hippie, a biker, a bear, a trucker, a trailer park, and this is the music description, trailer park music, rural folk, and cowboy. I will tell you that by no means is any of the music pornographic, but the vast majority of it has adult content, so consider yourself warned. Don Harvey, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Peter.
Don, it's delightful to have you here. We've had to reschedule Don several times due to various technical issues we had along the way, and thank you for bearing with us, Don.
No problem.
Don, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, just fine. And if that changes at all during the course of the evening, just let us know. And the studio has lots of knobs and dials, and they can tweak it right up. Don, you are an amazing person, to say the least. We know you started playing piano when you were just a small child. Did you come from a musical family? Were there lots of brothers? You played with a brother in the band?
Well, I have one older brother, and he and I played, as I mentioned, in bands together for about 3 years. My father was an eye surgeon, but when he was in college, he played trumpet in some of the big dance bands in northern Ohio. So there was always music in the house when I was growing up.
I see. And your mother, too, was she musically oriented?
She didn't play any instruments. Well, actually, she did, come to think of it. She played violin when she was young, but I never heard her play. I think she gave it up at an early age.
Well, Don, did you take these piano lessons when you were at eight? When did the piano teacher come to your house, or did you have to make a trip across town?
We went to a music studio, and it was very interesting. The teacher, she was a Russian emigre, and just kind of spoke broken English, but was a very, very good teacher. My recollection of it is that for the first maybe 2 months or so, we never even played piano. It was basically training our ears to hear pitches and hear relative pitches. So, for instance, if she played a C note on the middle C on the piano, she would then say, okay, hum an A. And so we'd have to know what the intervals were. So we got a lot of ear training before we even started to bang on the ivories.
Wow, well, I would think offhand that's a great way to learn. Is that an unusual method to teach piano?
It might be. I think it is. But it actually served me really well, because when I was starting to play in rock bands, we'd get a 45 that just came out, and we'd want to learn it. Well, there was no sheet music, so you'd have to learn everything by ear. So having that kind of training in advance was extremely useful for playing popular music.
Wow, I should think so. You're probably just about the most accomplished one in the room as far as the band was concerned, or did your brother also have musical training at an early age?
He and I took lessons in tandem. Yeah, we both started at the same time.
I see. The same teacher?
Same teacher, yeah. He'd have one lesson, then I'd have mine.
I see.
We were on the same page.
Yeah, you definitely grew up with the same. I would call that an advanced technique to have to pick out the notes. What prompted you? Was there an electronic organ in your home? Is that in your house when you're growing up? Is that how you switched to organ? It says that you switched after starting piano lessons at about 8 years old.
Yes, we had a Hammond organ in the house. My father gave up playing trumpet when he was in college, but took up playing organ. And so, and it was all popular music, not Bach or Mozart or anything like that. So we had an organ in the house and a piano. So it was great.
I see the organs. Yes, the electronic organs back in the day. Not to date either one of us, but one wonders: did they have electronic beat accompaniment? Did were there any of the advanced features that you'd find today?
There was none of that back then. No, there were no automatic chords or any of the sort of electronic tricks that you can use now in organs. It was two keyboards, and then there was also a set of two octaves of foot pedals. So it was really interesting because you had to, use both your hands and one of your feet for the bass notes and the other foot for the volume control. So it was a real coordination feat to play those instruments.
Well, some of those old organs, and I would assume this is an old tube-type organ, just the sound was stunning, for lack of any other words. But were you fascinated by the sounds it produced back in the day?
Yes, and one of the speakers was a Leslie speaker, and I'm not sure whether you're familiar with them, but it was a speaker, and it had a rotating baffle in it.
Yeah.
So it gave a sort of a dimension to the sound.
Wow, but Don, those things are huge. You must have had a huge room to have the organ and a Leslie.
Yes, actually, the organ, the two speakers were in cabinets. They were kind of just built into the wall.
Wow.
The organ was recessed into a little space also. My dad was a surgeon.
he could
afford it.
Yeah, that sounds like a stunning. I mean, how could you not be musical with organ and Leslie's built in the wall? I mean, it's just the very idea is astounding. So the Beach Boys came along in the British Invasion, and then you took up bass guitar.
Yes. My brother had friends that were starting to form a band, and I didn't want to be left out. So he was starting to play guitar. And, everybody wanted to be a lead guitarist or a drummer or a keyboard player. And sort of the least flashy instrument to play was the bass guitar. Of course, I ended up getting stuck with that. So that's actually why I took up bass, is because it was the one instrument that few people wanted to play.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, back in the day, the lead guitarist was always the favorite instrument, but the bass was, of course, so important. What sort of venues did you and your brother and the other folks, were they from the school your brother went to? Was it kind of a school sort of band?
Yeah. the rest of the guys in the band were classmates of my brother in high school. And the sort of jobs we played, it was mostly, you know, I think the first job I played was a junior high sock hop, one of those after-school dances. And the rest of the jobs, they were mostly high school dances and an occasional private party. This was in, you know, from 1965 to about 1968.
Yeah. Was there an organ in the group, too? Did anybody play an organ or a keyboard of any sort?
Well, actually, my brother played both organ and rhythm guitar. So he switched off depending on what the particular song needed.
I see. The reason I ask is because I'm looking at some of the groups whose songs you covered, and, of course, the Stones, the Beatles, and the Birds, but I see the Animals, and I can't imagine there is a house at New Orleans without an organ.
Right. that was critical.
Yeah, absolutely critical for at least that one song. So your brother took off and went to school and to college, and you were still in high school at the time?
Yeah. He was two grades ahead of me. So when he left, I still had two more years of school before I headed off to college.
I see. And did the band continue, or did it sort of come apart when your brother left?
Well, it came apart when my brother left because all of those guys were college age then. So everybody went their own way. I was the youngest in the band by like 2 years, yeah. So I was hanging out with all these older guys, which was kind of neat.
Yeah, it would be. And so then a few years passed, and then you yourself head off for college, and you continue to play bass in college. But how did you get your first group together? How did that work when you first went to college, and how quickly did that happen?
Well, I went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and there was an area on Central Campus called the Diag, and people would go there and just hang out. And there was this one group of guys there who had acoustic guitars, and they would be singing songs, Crosby, Stills, Nash type songs, James Taylor, that sort of stuff. And I started hanging out with them and say, "Hey, I play bass." And, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but we decided, okay, well, let's put a band together. And so that's how it happened. That's how I started playing in college.
I see. And did you play with various bands throughout college there, or did that band hold together?
That band held together for about 2 years. And
that was a long time for a band, actually, back in the day.
It was, and it was actually a lot of fun. Most of us for a while lived in a group house, so we had a rock and roll house. So we practiced there, and most of the band members lived there. So that was a lot of fun, although it did interfere with studies a little bit now and then.
Well, point of curiosity, Don, had you come out when you were playing with the band? Were you out in college, or did that happen later in life?
It happened when I was a sophomore in college, so that was like 1972, 1973. And that was just towards the end of this particular band. But I didn't have any trouble. Everybody was, it was Ann Arbor, which was a very socially liberal city.
I see.
And there was a lot of, a gay liberation front was active there. And so it was very left, left-leaning socially. And so it was probably one of the best places to come out.
I see. It does sound like a wonderful environment. And the band accepted you. What a great thing. Not that your orientation would have anything to do with the music, but so many times it becomes a political issue, irregardless. And more recently, I'm seeing that you have you've been playing in a bluegrass group.
Yeah, for about 4 years or so. And we actually never played, we played maybe half a dozen times out in public. What we would do would be to get together just about every other Thursday evening at someone's house, and we'd cook dinner, eat dinner together, and then spend a couple hours playing music. So it was just living room music. And
I see.
No pressure, but it was really wonderful.
I see. And is this the same, was it the bluegrass group that recorded Mohawk Comb Over, or was that yet another group?
No, no. the Mohawk Comb Over was with a group of musicians from Cleveland, Ohio, that I sort of knew tangentially when I was in high school. We had mutual friends, but I really didn't know these guys too well. And then through a series of unusual circumstances, got back in touch with them. They were a band that had played a lot during the late 70s and early 80s in Cleveland. And then they kind of disbanded. Everybody went their own ways, got married, had kids. And then for some reason they decided to put the band together again to do a studio album. And that's kind of how I got involved with that that project.
Well, for the folks in the chat room, we are posting links to Don Harvey's site, which is located at myspace.com/DrDonHarvey. That's D-R-D-O-N Harvey, H-A-R-V-E-Y, for those of you who are not in the chat room. Don, did you study to be a doctor, or how do we have the DR addition there?
Well, actually, I do have a PhD, not a medical degree or anything.
I see.
I study biology.
I
do science. Natural history is my vocation.
I see. Well, we have some of the smartest people on the planet who listen to this network, and so that's, you can go there if you want to. We probably try to stick to the music in any case, but he can be found at myspace.com/Dr. Dr. Don Harvey. Tell us about Barrapalooza. Now, we have our listeners, we have a large number of straight listeners who are progressive and don't think twice about LGBT folks regarding anything but just equals. And we have an LGBT audience also. But many of our straight listeners might not know what a bear is or what Barrapalooza is. So if you could take on those two topics.
Sure. First, bears. Bears are a subset of gay men. There's sort of a bear movement that started maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and I think it was a reaction against a lot of the stereotype of really slender, no facial hair sort of appearance that was the gay standard. And bears tend to be bigger guys, usually with facial hair, and they tend to dress a little bit more butch, no satin shirts or anything like that. So I guess that's sort of a simplistic way of looking at it, but it's a subculture within the gay community.
Yeah, nonetheless that was well said. And what is the Barrapalooza?
Barrapalooza is a really neat series of events. There's a man, Freddie Freeman, who about 6 years ago decided to put on a show in New York City with other bear musicians. And it was just a small event. I think there might have been about four or five performers there in a very small space. But he wanted to have a venue where bear musicians could play, and it was a way of networking with other musicians and meeting other people, and a chance for people to display their talent. Well, it started out about 6 years ago, and Freddie has continued with it, and it has grown every year. It's gotten bigger and bigger, and it's involved more and more musicians. I think probably on the order of 35 musicians, gay male musicians, have participated in these various Barrapalooza shows. Freddie moved to Nashville quite a few years ago, and they, I think initially they just had one performance a year, but there was a lot of community support, and it's just kind of grown. This past spring, they did the first road trip, where they started out in New York and then came down the East Coast, and played in Boston, Baltimore, D.C., then up to Philly, and then down to Raleigh, North Carolina. So there were a series of shows. There was a core group of people who were at all of the shows, and then some of the local musicians in the different areas would also appear. So it's, I've played four of the shows now, and it's been a wonderful experience, because there's an awful lot of camaraderie. People will, help out each other on their sets. So whenever I played, I had, at least two other musicians, who learned, parts of my songs and played up there on stage, and, I did the same.
I see. Well, my understanding is that there are actually there are record labels too that pretty much record for the bear music. Is that true? Are there labels that specifically devote to that?
Yes, there is an organization, Wooby Bear Music. And
that's that. I remember it. Yes.
They started probably about 5 years ago. And they started out and they released one CD called Bear Tracks that had about a dozen songs on it, all from different bear-identified musicians. That turned out really well, and they expanded it. About a year later, they had Bear Tracks 2, and then they've had Bear Tracks 3 and 4. And then they've gone global now, and they have compilation albums with people not necessarily bears anymore, but, you know, the entire gay community, and worldwide, not just from the United States. And you can find out more by going to woobybearmusic.com.
I see. And that spell Wooby Bear for us.
W-O-O. B-I-E-B-E-A-R M-U-S-I-C.com.
I see. Well, Don, if you had to describe the type of music that you would hear at a Barrapalooza, I've been grappling with trying to describe your music. It's very eclectic, and I read a list of some of the things it's been called. I would almost call it gay folk music. Is that a general style of the Barrapalooza?
Actually, it started out kind of like that. It started out mostly with sort of the singer-songwriter playing an acoustic guitar format, but it's expanded a lot since then. So we have, there have been Barrapalooza shows that have had gay rap musicians. There have been people who are more into electronica. There have been, you know, sort of full rock bands. So it started out with a fairly narrow focus, but it's now really broadened to a large variety of different genres.
I see. Well, Don, in the past we had a fellow on named Scott Free, and we talked about the difficulty in getting booked into some of the – it's coming up Gay Pride season again, and that it was mainly the diva acts, the big dance acts – and the disco divas that were, in fact, Scott Free did a song about that we play. Is that changing any, or are you still finding some resistance for bear music in the Pride events? Because it seems to be a waste to not include you.
Well, I would say that it's actually getting a lot better. In D.C., we had Pride a couple weekends ago, and there were at least four gay musicians or gay acts that performed on the stage. And it's true in many other the Pride events around the country. There's one local musician here, Tom Goss, who came on the scene about 2 years ago, and he's been playing the Pride events in D.C. and Baltimore and a lot of places around the country even. So initially it was, you know, it would be very difficult to find a gay person performing at a gay Pride event, but I think that's changing for the better.
Well, good, as it should, because it just, it's, you know, everyone's, and I have a lot of the disco divas in the show, and having DJ'd back in the 80s, of course, that's the style of music I've played in the clubs, but it certainly doesn't mean that that's the only kind of music that gay folks like by any means. It's just the environment that it's played in. You know, you wouldn't play it necessarily some of the folk type songs on a dance floor, but nonetheless, it seems to be almost we're stereotyped and painted into just liking dance music.
I think that's very, very true.
And you yourself, did you used to go to the clubs, to the dance clubs, just out of curiosity? And was that part of what it was coming out for you? Did you go to the dance? I mean, just every club was a dance club, just about, except for a few.
Right. When I first came out in like 1973 or so, there were no dance clubs in Ann Arbor. But when I moved to Austin, Texas, there were some big discos there, and that was the late 70s and early 80s. And I used to go out and, you know, dance till 2 o'clock at night. So, yeah, I was, you know, for quite a while I enjoyed that kind of music. But really, I'm an old hippie. The music that I grew up with and the music that I play is, you know, sort of very, very different from dance music.
I see. Well, let's talk about your new CD. My first impression of before even playing this CD was the booklet. Now, this booklet is really something special. What is it, like 15, 20 pages?
It's actually 24 pages.
Well, it's really quite remarkable. I'll describe it. It's done in sepia, and it's photographs of old photographs from the 30s or 40s. Can you give us a visual for the listeners?
Yeah, these are old photographs. They range from probably the teens up through the 30s. There might be, I think there's one or two that are more recent than that. They're photographs that are what they would call vernacular photographs. These are photographs that people took, and, you know, none of these are published anywhere. They're all, you know, kind of like private photographs, for the most part. And a lot of them are photographs of, sailors, wrestlers, soldiers, I think those are the main groups that there are photographs of.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly no shortage of the big handlebar mustaches. It's all very period.
Yes, yes. And I got most of these on eBay.
Ah.
I scoured eBay to find these.
I see. Well, I know the listeners can't see this, but the photograph for Oklahoma Jack, it looks like this fellow is surrounded by what? Is he being arrested, or what's up with the... You remember the picture?
Actually, the story on that is there's a wounded soldier who's kind of with his shirt off and kind of bandaged up. And the story that came with it was that he was actually a prisoner of war. And he's surrounded by all these soldiers, I presume, from the other army who are in, you know, big overcoats and very heavily dressed. And one of them is taking care of one of his bandages.
I see. It was hard to judge, and then there's so many photographs of you know, period back in the 20s and 30s of guys on the beach and playing together or sunbathing together. It's really quite remarkable to find pictures this old that are this, what can I say, gay. It just blows me away. And what a search you must have had to find these.
Well, actually, there's an awful lot of these out there. There have been several books published in the last 5 or 6 years that look at photographs from that period of time. And socially, what I should mention is that all these photographs were taken in Europe, not in the U.S. And people were much, or men particularly, were much more relaxed about being around other men, and not having their clothes on. And, I would expect that probably some of the men in these photographs are gay, but I think the overwhelming majority are not.
I see.
Although they look like they're homoerotic, it's just that people were not as uptight as they are today.
Yeah, I was trying to envision some of these beach scenes as having taken place somewhere in the United States, and my mind was really stretching to conceive that. Now that we've brought in Europe, that's an easier to deal with the explanation of that. And the artwork is just beautiful. As I say, the CD itself, without even getting into the music, is a class act. The artwork is just beautiful. And the book is extensive, and the lyrics are distributed throughout this booklet. And even the CD itself. Now, is that a hairy chest on the CD itself? I'm trying to figure.
Well, actually, it's a little bit below the chest.
I see.
My partner
okay.
took a picture of me coming out of the shower.
I see.
So it's studgy fur.
Well, yeah, it's wet fur. There's no doubt about it. One wonders, are some people, the music I mentioned it was adult content, and it's frivolous, and it's fun, and it's quite frank, and without being pornographic, it's quite explicit. What sort of reactions do you get from people when they hear some of the lyrics? Is this difficult for some people?
Not really. I really haven't run into any problems like that. I mean, one or two straight people have kind of raised their eyebrows at some of it, because, particularly there's one song, Good Old Boys, which, if you play it later, people will understand why it might raise a few eyebrows.
I see.
But for the most part, no. I mean, there's nothing, I avoid anything kind of pornographic in here. I mean, there are sexual references, but it's pretty lighthearted. There's nothing hardcore about the sexual references in the songs.
Well, I would have to agree, and certainly it's no more hardcore than some of the old Irish tunes about the sweet young lass.
Right.
Yes, exactly. It's just from an entirely different perspective. And if you don't mind, let's just start with your track one. I'd love for the listeners to hear it. It's a track called Sailing to Constantinople. You want to tell us about that before we run that? It's one of my favorites. The first track I really like. It's like a, well, you tell.
Well, actually, I'm glad you like it. It's the first song that I ever wrote.
Really?
Right above the lyrics, there's a picture of five German sailors who are all raising glasses or steins of beer, and there's a little sign that they're heading towards Constantinople. And the song actually started out as a poem that I wrote, as sort of a caption to the photograph. And I have a pump organ at home, and I decided, well, maybe I'll, try to set this to music. And I did, and that was the first song that I wrote.
Well, tell us, really, yeah, I came across the pump organ a couple of times in reading about you. Tell us precisely what a pump organ is. Do you mean like an accordion? What are you referring to with a pump organ?
Pump organs were actually extremely popular instruments around the turn of the century in the U.S., probably from about the 1870s through about 1910. They were mostly, most of them were parlor organs, and people would have them in their parlors. They're operated by foot pedals, which are attached to straps which operate bellows. So, and there are sets of reeds, brass reeds, that the air is pushed through. So, basically, you would go, it's called a pump organ because you pump it with your feet.
I see. Were these ever?
Beg your pardon?
No, please go ahead. Please go ahead. Please tell us where they were, because that's what I was about to ask, is how common were they, and were they portable in to any degree?
Well, there were two kinds. There were sort of the big Victorian pieces of furniture that were often made out of mahogany or walnut. So they were quite massive instruments. And those pretty much stayed put. You can't move them around very easily. But at about the same time, they also started manufacturing portable pump organs. And those are actually the ones that I use on the CD. I have a number of these things. And they fold into boxes that are about 3 feet long and about a foot by a foot by a foot. So they're quite portable. And they started manufacturing those around 1900. And they were used by traveling preachers, missionaries, and also chaplains in the armed services.
Wow.
They were built very sturdy. They could take a lot of abuse, and they would go out in the middle of nowhere, and if they wanted to have a church service, there would be a musical accompaniment that they could use.
I see. What an interesting story, because the only thing I could put in my mind was something like an accordion, but it certainly doesn't sound in any way like an accordion. It has an entirely wholly separate sound.
But it's based on the same principle. They're both operated by air being pushed through brass reeds.
I see. One wonders how many traveling Brother Love's traveling salvation shows those things perform. Do you know the history of the one that you have now?
Actually, I have about four of them, and I'm not sure the individual histories on them. Again, they were eBay purchases. And most of the people who sold them didn't know exactly, what their whole history was. I have one organ in the house that actually came from a church in Virginia, and I know more about that. It was built in the 1880s, and it was used in a small church in Virginia probably for about 100 years, and then was sold to someone who restores organs, and I got it from this guy. So.
Wow. And you apparently have every note that you hear on the entire CD and every voice that you hear, you've done entirely yourself. Is that right?
Yes. The entire CD was self-produced from beginning to end.
Well, I'm looking forward to playing the Sailing to Constantinople. I'm at a loss for words. Bob, let's run. You have it as track one, that Sailing to Constantinople.
Constantinople, our dear captain told us, let's go. So we pack up our mess kits with bratwurst and rye. We launder our pants in salt water and lye. And we stow jars of duck fat, just don't ask us why. We're heading out for the high sea. My captain, my shipmates, and me. Sailing on to Constantinople, and life on our ship is just grand. Out here on the ocean, we've nothing to fear. We wash down our suppers with tall steins of beer, and we choose for a bunkmate a man to hold dear. We fight for our country for free. Just give us our life on the sea. We're sailing into Constantinople, our brave captain warned us it's true, that when we're ashore we'll be put through our paces by big Turkish studs wearing black boots with laces, our heels in the air and brass
smiles on our faces, as happy as sailors can be. The Navy's the lifestyle for me. We're sailing out from Constantinople, 'cause our mission here is now through. We're leaving the port with some tears in our eyes. We need to appointment on our battered thighs. But those Ottoman soldiers are now our allies. We're proud of our service, you see. We did it for old Germany.
I laugh every time I hear the line. Those Ottoman soldiers are now our allies. It's just a hoot. That's absolutely. That's an exquisitely twisted track. I've got to tell you. You're very welcome. I don't use that phrase lightly. It is really. It's just wonderful. When did you write this, Doc?
I wrote these and recorded them about 5 years ago. Actually, between around October of 2002 and July of 2003, right during the run-up and the beginning of the invasion of Iraq.
I see. And you've waited until did you perform these live at some of the Bear Paloozas prior to releasing the CD? And you decided to compile them together. How did the idea of the CD come about?
I had recorded these and I'd been distributing them to friends, informally. And I was approached by the people from Barapalooza about playing one of the shows. And I thought, oh, what a great idea, because I'd never performed any of this stuff live. And once I did that, it was such fun that I got such a positive response from the folks that I decided, well, I really better get this out there. And so then I had to go through the process of selecting exactly which tracks. There are 16 tracks on the CD, but I'd written about 30 songs and recorded them during that period of time. So it was part of it was a process of, eliminating some of them, which is kind of hard to do. They're all your children in a way. But I got some help from Robert Urban, who is a fairly well-known gay musician and producer in New York City. I sent him a whole set of the songs, and he very graciously suggested which ones to cut and which ones to leave in. And then I had to get all the artwork together, and that took several months to compose the plate, the pages, and do all the graphics work.
I see.
So I've been collecting the photographs for years.
I see. So there was that was in the back of your mind to use those, and quite rightly, why not? What a perfect visual to go with these. So you cropped them and designed the 24-page booklet then?
Yes. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Photoshop on that.
I imagine you did. Where can folks buy this CD? Because by the time we played, so we're going to play a lot more music, folks, but where can one locate the CD for sale?
It's for sale through CD Baby, which is the online source for pretty much all independently released CDs.
And should they do a search for Don Harvey, or is there an easy to remember link?
Search for Don Harvey or Good Clean Fun.
Good Clean Fun, which is the name of the CD. And what an interesting CD. Tell us about Cruising. I mean, the track.
The track. that was a. I think that was the, pretty much these songs are in the chronological order that I wrote them. So Cruising was probably about the third song that I wrote. And in part, it was the title was sort of a reaction. There was a movie back in the 70s, Cruising, which was not very favorably looked upon by the gay community. It involved
No, it really wasn't. It was the bottom of the bottom is what it was. And of course, since nobody knew anything about gay folks, that's what the people thought was the whole deal. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry I didn't mean to interject, but I just so strongly agree about that movie.
Right, right. And it dealt with S&M or S&M bars. And so I wanted to write something that was completely opposite of that. It took a much more positive, sex-positive view of cruising of leather sex. So that was sort of the impetus
right.
in the back of my mind for it.
Right, right, right. There's some... no need to go there. It's just that so many of the earlier, we were either completely psychologically gone, and having a self hate meltdown, or it was something along the lines of cruising. There was no middle speed back in those days. And so you wrote this song in relation to that new movie somehow.
I wasn't consciously thinking of it when I actually wrote it, but then as it progressed, then I realized that I was trying to put a completely positive spin on what had been basically trashed by straight media.
Yeah, I understand. And cruising, the track called Cruising is Result. Bob, you have that, by the way, is track two. The studio doesn't actually have the title. They just have the track numbers. So, Bob, if you'd cue up track two, and we'll run that for listeners. This is the second song on Don Harvey's album, Good Clean Fun, Cruising.
Tank top and well-packed blue jeans, short black hair, tattoos and goatee, he looks kind of mean. Well, I don't mind, 'cause from his left side he's got hanging keys. He's just my kind, those leather bad boys bring me to my knees. Like he's built for sports. I'd like to swim in his shorts. Comes the dawn, I make him coffee while he's still in bed. And it's strong. I'll have no patience for a sleepy head. My wrists are sore. Those handcuffs last night were a bit too tight. Now I want more. This time I won't pretend we'll have to fight. He looks up at me and he grins. Then we start all over again.
The line "built for sports" is priceless, and it really does set the tone. You know, I'm no stranger to leather clubs, and it really is a lot lighter, and actually more of a spirit of fun than certainly the movie Cruising suggested. And I have to say, well done, because it did you laugh when you wrote this? Because I can't. I have to laugh out loud every time. I was laughing out loud while the track was playing. Did you? What was your frame of mind? Did you think of this as being somewhat humorous?
Oh, of course. Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I had a lot of fun doing this stuff, and I tried to. The idea was to have it humorous. I mean, if you listen to most of the songs, there are a couple that are sad and deal with. More sober experiences, but a lot of it's just pretty lighthearted.
I see.
When I was writing all of these songs, I decided that I wanted to have being gay as a given, and there were no issues about coming out, there were no issues of justification of one's orientation. And no songs about being a victim. I just wanted to have music that just took being gay for granted and then went from there.
Wow, that really puts into words my feeling, my impressions about it. Because in fact, there is no explanation. There is no building up to the point. There's no coming out. There's no angst. It's just a gay song. And it's really quite frank, to tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, and after, a lot of these were written, I realized that, this is the kind of music that I wish there was around when I was growing up and starting to play music. Stuff that was, obviously gay in content, but that took it just as for granted as the heterosexually oriented music that I played for decades took heterosexuality for granted.
Well, you're absolutely right. In fact, unless you're in an area like San Francisco or some of the enclaves of the larger city, you simply go out with the mindset that everybody's straight. It's kind of a knock in the head to just assume the opposite when you hear these tracks. It's well done. Really, really it is. Tell us about the instruments that you use on these other than the pump organ. Now, I understand you have a collection of guitars. We have some musicians who are listeners, so the reason I bring this out.
Right. I'm a bass guitarist, and in the bands that I've played in, I've always been playing bass, which is a four-stringed guitar that's tuned an octave lower than regular guitars. It's the same as one of the upright string basses in terms of the pitch of the strings. And although I played bass in bands for years, I was always kind of a closet guitarist. I always wanted to play guitar. And so about 8 years or so ago, I got an acoustic guitar. And I had a small electric. And so I started playing those. So the instruments you hear are, I have two different basses that I use. I have two different acoustic guitars and then one electric guitar. So there were basically five string instruments that I used and the organ.
I see. And do you have a particular guitar that's a favorite because of a particular sound that it produces, or are they kind of interchangeable?
Oh, they're, you know, every instrument is different. The main instrument that I used was one acoustic guitar that was built by this luthier in York, Pennsylvania. And it just has a really sweet sound to it and extremely easy to play. And I just really love the instrument. So that's the main instrument that I use. It's very interesting that I found that with electric instruments, and I guess with acoustic guitars also, the actual tone of the instrument and the way it plays, the way it sounds, affects what you play, the sort of the style that you play. If you try to play the same notes on one kind of an electric guitar and did that same set of notes on an acoustic guitar, it would sound very, very different. And I feel that, you know, the instruments that I play, the way it sounds really affects your playing. So it's good to have a variety of instruments around, I think.
I see. Well, moving on to your track called Oklahoma Jack. Now, in listening to it, having DJed in some of the dance clubs, you referred to cha-cha heels a number of times in the song, and I was thinking that you were making a reference to the what was her name? Eartha Kitt? Was it the Eartha Kitt cha-cha heels, the Gimme Gimme cha-cha heels? Was it that in reference, or where did you come up with the cha-cha heels?
No. The reference to cha-cha heels was from a John Waters film, Female Trouble.
That's right.
Are you familiar with that film?
Yes. I decided to look at some of those, the Waters, it was about 6 or 8 months ago. I looked at several, and that's right. That was which one was the... Was it who was doing?
Divine was a bad girl, and she got into all sorts of trouble. And at the beginning of the film, when she's in high school, she wants a Christmas present from her parents of a pair of cha-cha heels.
Yes,
and
she doesn't
get it.
So
she throws a fit, and she pushes over the Christmas tree, it lands on top of her mother, and she storms out of the house. And that was the end of her relationship with her parents.
And the next thing you know, she's hitchhiking and having sex with some guy on the side of the road.
Right, which actually was the same, which was also Divine, not in drag.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. The guy in the car?
Yes.
I'll be darned. You just never know what you're going to find out on this show. Yeah, that's right. She wanted cha-cha heels. I had completely forgotten that. My mind immediately went to the old Eartha Kitt song. And I thought, well, I wonder if he's basically... So in this song, you're going to hang up your cha-cha heels, I believe, is how the lyric goes. It's a great track, and it's your track number 3. And, Bob, can we roll Oklahoma Jack? It's number 3, please.
Cha-cha heels now. Say goodbye to my cha-cha heels. Bye-bye. go. Hanging up my cha-cha heels, saying goodbye to my cha-cha heels now. Putting away my cha-cha heels, saying goodbye to my cha-cha heels. Oh, bye-bye.
This track is from the perspective of a guy named Oklahoma Jack, or a guy named Jack at Oklahoma, who's hanging it up and headed for Frisco. Am I getting that right?
Well, actually, what my sort of after the fact, what I decided this story was somebody who goes from the hinterlands, Oklahoma, to San Francisco, gets wrapped up in the fast lane sex scene, and then burns out on it and says, I've had it with this.
I see. And so often that is a very true story of the community. So many grow up in small towns, thousands upon thousands, and so there's this tendency to make up for lost time as soon as you hit the city.
Right. But also, yeah, people can burn out on that after a while.
Yeah. The guitar work in an Oklahoma Jack is really exceptional. It really, really is. Did that just come to you, or was that a long session of having to write that riff?
No, actually, I remember it. All of it came to me almost instantly. I have no idea how these things happen, but the whole thing, the whole idea for the song took a couple minutes. I remember riding on the metro when it happened, and I just scribbled down the words, and I had the idea for the guitars in my head. I do all these recordings, or I did all these recordings in my living room, which it's not quite as high of a quality of a sound as you can get in a recording studio, but having recording equipment at home allows you to capture something spontaneously. A lot of these tracks were recorded, at least the instrumentals were recorded one track right after another. And by track, I mean one guitar part, then you put another guitar part on top of that when you're playing it back. And so that way you can capture a lot of spontaneity.
Well, it certainly shows in Oklahoma Jack. That's actually one of my favorites too. Sailing to Constantinople and also Dancing with Mike and Queer Cowboy Lament. We're away from getting to Queer Cowboy Lament, but I definitely want to hit that before the show's over. But that's destined to become an absolute gay classic. That is such an incredible song. How long did it take you to write Cowboy Lament?
That was the most difficult song to write and to record. It went through many, many different iterations before I got it right. And I remember taking off a couple days of work and just doing nothing but staying at home and trying to figure out how to arrange it. I was also pretty depressed when I wrote that one, too.
I see. Well, it was. It reminded me. It made me think of the AIDS epidemic. Is that what was in your mind too when you wrote that?
That's what it was about. Yeah. I lived in Austin, Texas, and you know, some of it. It's a mixture of, you know, reality and metaphor. But I did have a partner when I was living in Austin who died of AIDS. And a group of us did go out into the wild of, you know, West Texas and scattered his ashes there. So, you know, the idea of that song is based in the reality of the AIDS epidemic and, you know, the losses that so many of us have had.
Yes, the song touched me deeply, and I too have lost loved ones due to you know, a few years back the cocktails were around, and so many people, only because the timing was wrong, died very, very horrible deaths. And well, do you mind if we skip ahead? And I'd like to share with the listeners a different style entirely with Queer Cowboy Limit. And another interesting aspect of this, as another, there were, you were in another interview, a written interview that I read earlier, points out that if you think it's easy to write a believable cowboy song, just try it. And that's what really is so interesting about this song too, is it's an absolutely believable cowboy song. And you expect to hear it sung in an old black and white Western, except that the subject matter is different. You really pulled this off well. You really did. I've got to tell you, it's an amazing track. And Bob, let's skip up to track 16. We're going out of order here, but it's called Queer Cowboy Lament. And in fact, this was the first track I heard of Don's, and it's the track that first attracted me toward Don. And it's called Queer Cowboy Lament, track 16.
The sky, it is cloudless, and we're up at dawn. A cup of black coffee, and soon we'll be gone. A hard day of riding out under the sun. We're dusty and tired when evening comes. We sit by the fire, Will sings us a song. Sunny plays fiddle, we all sing along. Then under the blankets to ward off night's chill, it's sunny with Roger and I sleep with Will. I am a queer cowboy and I ride the range with Sunny and Roger and Will. My constant companions, we don't think it strange to sleep stretched out under the stars and dream wrapped in each other's arms. Stretched out under the stars and dream wrapped in each other's arms.
took Sonny, though he was quite strong. His body was burning, he did not last long. Then soon followed Roger, and we could but cry. But when fever took Will, I just wanted to die. I gathered their ashes and rode for 6 hours, leaving them to the mesquite and wildflowers. The long purple shadows would not soothe my pain. As I cried that I'd never go riding again. I am a queer cowboy and I rode the range with Sonny and Roger and Will, my loving companions for 17 years. Oh Lord, how I miss them still. Sonny and Roger and Will.
Don, I would be embarrassed to tell you how many times I've listened to that track. And I have to tell you, it touched me deeply the first time I heard it, and it's really irresistible. For anyone who lived through those times, even if you look at it at just the surface level, it's a beautifully done song. And all I can say to you, Don, is you got to love a guy that can write a song like that. That blows me away.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's really exceptional in every way, even down to the instrumentation. It's absolutely authentic, and what a wonderful track. If you never did, you get a lot of comments on that particular track?
I think a lot of people really like it, even though it's sad. But I think it touches a lot of people, people in our generation who've been through this.
Well, it certainly touched me. It's probably the most touching I've heard. That it brought up so many memories, and not to mention the fact that it's just plain good song. It just amazes me, and it's a very different spirit. Are most of your songs along a more lighthearted line, or are there other tracks in the album similar to Queer Cowboy Lament?
Well, there's one other song that's the song Old Photograph, which is actually a song about a friend of mine that I played back in the late 60s who died very young. I think he was 25 years old from just abusing drugs and alcohol. So that's kind of a sad song too, in a way. But those really, I think, are the only sad songs on the CD.
I see. Well, why don't we run the sad ones back to back, because I'm afraid we'll have the last track for the evening be a sad one, and we'll leave it on a sad note. So let's go ahead and run the track 11. It's called Old Photograph. Did you actually, were you looking at, did you have a photograph of him? Is this a reality?
It's actually the photograph that you see in the booklet.
I'll be darned.
That's
okay, great.
On the right, and I'm the small figure in the center.
I'll be darned. Well, I didn't realize that. Thank you. And Bob, if you would run the track 11, please, Old Photograph.
Thank you.
25 years old, then you're gone. So far gone, nothing left but your song.
It's a strikingly beautiful song, and as Bob is pointing out in production chat, it has a very almost Simon and Garfunkel feeling to it, and the guitar work is exquisite. Would you say that the guitar work was influenced somewhat by your stint doing the country and western band in Austin, because it has a real country feel to it?
Actually, it was more influenced by my love of Grateful Dead. I think it's more sort of like the American Beauty period of Grateful Dead music, and I love the Grateful Dead. So I think that's kind of where the instrumental influence was on that, more than country.
Beautifully, parts. I see. Well, what was it like, by the way, being in a country and western band? Could you be yourself with them? What was that like?
It was kind of strange because it was a trio, and I met the guys when I was in graduate school in Austin. This was the early '80s, and they were both native Texans, pretty redneck, you know. Rifle rack kind of on the pickup truck kind of guys. And actually I came out to one of them and fairly early on, but not with the other guy, who was pretty conservative. So it was kind of strange. It was really the only time that I was not fully open with musicians. That particular time and place.
I see. Well, was this a fairly successful band? Was it in existence for quite a while?
We played for probably about 3 years. I was in grad school at the time, so it was sort of a distraction. We had a regular gig every 2 weeks at the student union for quite a while. And we played private parties. So
I see.
But, they were good guys.
Yeah, and of course in Austin, growing up in the South, I've always liked country and western music, so I could understand the attraction. So apparently you liked it too, to be able to do that for quite a while. Did you do covers?
It wasn't until I moved to Austin that I and was exposed to country music that I really listened to it very much. I mean, that was really my first exposures, and a lot of that. I also like to country and western dance. I learned to two-step and a bunch of the line dances and stuff. And so that was another way that country music kind of seeped into my consciousness.
That was certainly the rage. In fact, that was all great fun. Were you a singer? Did you sing with that band?
No. Well, I did a little bit of backup singing. But this... Really, on this CD is the first time I've ever done any lead singing. So it's that was the biggest challenge for me, far more than the instruments, was doing the vocals.
I see. Well, tell us about the track called My Man. Is that written about someone?
No, and not anyone in particular. Although I was kind of thinking of the photograph that accompanies the lyrics. If you look at it, you'll see that it's a photograph of a Russian wrestler.
Kind of arms akimbo,
and he's got a skull and crossbones tattooed on his chest.
Yeah, that was really a striking image. Yeah, what was that about?
Who knows? I mean, this is a photograph from about 1910 or so. I think he was just trying to look as ferocious as possible.
Well, he certainly pulled it off.
Yeah, he's got the look. And yeah, the song, I don't know if you remember a song, My Guy, back in the 60s by Mary Wells.
Oh, sure. Who could forget?
Well, this is kind of, I think of the song as sort of Mary Wells on acid and steroids.
Oh, that's so twisted. Oh, nothing you could say could drive me away from My Man, if I recall the lyrics. And compare it, oh, my stars, you're something else. Let's roll track 12 then, Bob. It's My Man. We'll try to forget Mary Wells. Roll it, Bob.
My man, he rocks, and when we're making love, he knocks me off my socks.
Hey now,
I said my man's so strong that when we're making love, we do it all night long.
Hey now,
I said my man is tough, and when we're making love, he likes it really rough.
Hey now,
I said my man's got grit, and if I were you, I'd never question it. He's my man. My man can fly a plane, and he can build a fire in the pouring rain.
Hey now.
My man can take an axe, and he can fell an oak in 20 seconds flat.
Hey now.
My man can lift a truck, and if you mess with him, I save you out of luck.
Hey now.
My man is so extreme that when he looks at you, cuts like a laser beam. And he's my man. Crossbones that you cross his chest.
Hey now.
I warn you in advance, there's a spinning cobra caught inside his pants.
Hey now.
He rides a chrome machine, and when I ride with him, he always makes me cream.
Hey now.
The man knows goddamn well that if he ever asked, I'd follow him to hell. Cause he's my man.
Don, I get it now with the Hey Now lyric, because that is so reminiscent of the Barry Wells type of, it was just priceless having that clue. And Hey Now, that's just perfect. Was that your influence when you did that? Okay, we may have.
There's sort of a tradition of songs boasting about your partner.
Oh, yes. My Boyfriend's Back is among them.
Right, exactly. It's usually been, you know, chick songs. So I figured, you know, this would be a fun thing to do and make it gay and just completely over the top.
The Hey Now just clinches it. That's just too much. Oh, man. Yeah, it's that's your sense of irony is really something. And by the way, I should tell you that the chat room really loves your music. There have been lots of wonderful comments that this is great, and they're actually a lot of folks really enjoying the music. I can usually tell how well a show is going over by the reactions in the chat room. I just wanted to let you know. And I'm always a little poor on giving out the phone numbers. I give them out at the beginning of the show. But if you'd like to call and participate, it's 877, the number 4, head on. Again, that translates to 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. And that's area code 304-658-3333. And email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. You pick.
I want you to play Good Old Boys, which is the next track.
And what's the story with Good? Is this part of the Austin?
Yeah, this was actually I wrote this song after I had my first date with the man who became my partner.
I don't know what that says.
Obviously, it was a good day.
Apparently.
And I just wanted to write a song that, I guess the theme was transgressive. You know, it just kept piling on something you don't expect from a good old boy.
I see. So even here, there's a sense of irony that goes with it. As long as we're talking about your partner, what is his name?
My partner's name is Fred.
I see.
We've been together for 5 years now, and
I see.
He's a social worker, a clinical social worker. Kids.
That sounds like a great thing to do. I'm glad to hear about your. Yeah, we always like to sometimes threaten to call back later and interview the partner. It's an empty threat, but sometimes we get people to believe it. But in any case, Bob, if you could roll the track 13 called Good Old Boys, please, sir.
I'm a dope-smoking, guitar-picking, shit-kicking redneck guy. Got me a pickup truck, and you know I sure love getting high. So won't you come on over, and we'll have a few pokes, drink a few beers, and we'll tell a few jokes. I'm just a dope-smoking, guitar-picking, shit-kicking redneck guy. I'm a dope-smoking, guitar-picking, cock-sucking son of a gun. I play a Telecaster, and I ain't afraid to have some fun. Oh, I can play you some licks that'll make you smile, then give you a blowjob that brings you to your eyes, 'cause I'm a dope-smoking, guitar-picking, cock-sucking son of a gun. I'm a dope smoking guitar picking boot licking good old boy. I pack more heat than most, and I'm not too old to play with toys. So won't you come on over and we'll try some new games? We can do things, make your mama ashamed, cause we're just dope smoking, rum smoking, guitar picking boot licking, pill popping, pants dropping, piss drinking, kids stinking, shit kicking, crotch sniffing, cock sucking good old boys.
Oh, my stars. Oh, you wrecked the chat room with that one. That's amazing, and it's right out of the line of the shit-kicking country and western stuff that you hear, but from a whole different point of view. What a mind-bender that is.
Yeah, that's really twisted country.
Very twisted country. I would think there are a lot of people who are shaking their heads. They do not approve. Wonderful.
Oh, that's fine.
Exactly. Wonderful stuff. And the guitar work there is really dynamite. That really has a very. You could just walk that out of a country western song. It's just perfect for that particular track. And you were playing, were you playing the Stratocaster when you did that?
The Telecaster.
The Telecaster. That's
yeah, the Telecaster is one of the oldest styles of electric guitars made by Fender. And it's the sort of the classic country and western, the twang sound on all the old country records of electric guitars, invariably a Telecaster.
I see. And what I think I called it a Stratocaster. Is there a Stratocaster, or did I get that completely wrong?
No,
I'm not a musician.
That's the other Fender guitar is a Stratocaster, which has a very different tone to it. It was the guitar that Jimi Hendrix used, so it has a you can compare that to the sound of a country guitar, and you see there's a great difference.
I see. Well, we have musicians who understand these differences and the nuances of the various instruments, but I'm afraid some of that I don't completely understand. But apparently there's quite a different character in the tonality of the different Fender products over time. Is that right? Is the old stuff, do you think it's better?
Actually, yeah. I mean, the one bass that I really love that I use through most of this CD is something that was built in 1973. It was actually a Gibson bass guitar that only a couple thousand of them were made. They didn't catch on at the time, but they have a wonderful, really clear tone. It's a Gibson Les Paul signature bass is the name for the particular model. But yeah, in different models of guitars have very different tonal characteristics to them, and a lot of them feel different when you play them. So that all affects how they sound and how what you play on them.
Is the track that we just played, "Good Old Boys," is that one of Fred's favorites?
Yes, he likes that very much.
Does he have another favorite? Maybe we can let Fred pick the next one.
Fred, what's your favorite? He likes Jake, which is
okay.
Track number 9. It's another
number 9
country and western type song.
Okay. Well, we got the studio has queued up track 9 for us, and this track is called Jake. Roll it, Bob.
I met my Jake at the construction site way back when I thought I was straight. And then one night he got shit-faced drunk, and well, now I'm his mate. We can't afford a cable TV, and we don't drink fine bottles of wine. So just pick up a six-pack of beer and stop by, we're sure to have a good time. But if our trailer's blocking, don't bother knocking, but Jake and I won't answer the door. Cause if our trailer's blocking, it's easy stalking, it's me on the cutting room floor. My Jake's had big hands that could crush concrete, but I know he'd never do me harm. I'm so in love with that hunk of a man, and all his redneck charm.
Life in this trailer park in high class, but with Jake I've got no regrets. We fly our rainbow and American flags, tornadoes ain't got us yet. And when our trailer's blocking, don't bother knocking, cause Jake and I won't answer the door. But when our trailer's blocking, the PC's talking, and you'll be on the living room floor. Don't bother knocking, cause Jake and I won't answer the door. But when our trailer's blocking, it means he's talking, it should be on the living room floor. And if our trailer's jumping, it means we're thumping, don't wait too hard to pick up and go. And if you hear some bumping, it's just Jake pumping DNA and his buddy's back door. We're two things who always want more. We don't care if we break the law. We do it till we both are up
law. We don't care if we break the law. That's just absolutely classic. What a fun track that is.
That was before the Lawrence versus Texas.
Oh, I see. That's the key to understanding that. The folks that don't recognize that's the repeal of the sodomy laws in Texas. So you actually, that would have been breaking the law back in Texas in the day.
I was a felon, a repeat felon. Never convicted, though.
What an interesting, and it has the same sort of high energy country feel that we heard on Good Old Boys. I like both those tracks very much, and I had not had a chance to listen to Jake
and
today.
It probably has the most twisted line of all the. And if you hear some pumping, it's just Jake pumping DNA in his buddy's back door.
Oh, my stars. Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, you know, you just can't top a lyric like that. You just have to stop there and go on. What an amazing track. Well, thank you, Fred, for pointing that out to us. We're certainly going to run some more of the tracks here in just a moment, but I'm wondering, you had told us earlier that you had pulled these tracks from, I think, approximately 30 or so. Is there another CD in the future?
Well, I think so, although it'll be stuff that I've written since then. Since I've been partnered, the sort of the content, the lyrical content of the songs that I've written is very different because I'm sort of in a different place in my life. So I'm working on a whole new set of tunes, and I'll eventually, put them together for another CD, but they'll be quite different.
I see. Well, you told us earlier, Don, that you're a biologist, I believe. Do your biology mates, your coworkers know that you have a CD out and have they heard it or what?
Yeah.
Is this guy?
Oh yeah, really? Yeah. You know, quite a few of them do. And in fact, one of the women that I work with very closely at work helped me. She does publishing, and she helped me with some of the graphics programs to actually take the photoshopped images and put them into a program that printers can use. So I had help from one of my coworkers putting the package together here.
I see. So your coworkers must regard you as quite a character, do they not?
Yes, they do. And I'm out at work. I've been out for, ever since I started working at my workplace. And so it's never been a problem. So that's good.
I see. One wonders if you've ever picked up a guitar at, say, a Christmas party or some sort of a company function. Have you done something like that?
No.
Oh, my. That, might shake up the stockholders if you work for a private company, at the very least. Let's talk about some of the other tracks here. There's the track called "I Want a Buddy" is an interesting track. What was the story on that one? That was one of your early tracks. If it's number five on the CD, then it must have been one of the early ones you wrote.
Yes, it was a very early one, and actually, it's totally based in reality, and it's I met this guy who. I guess you would, back then, I guess metrosexual would have been a good description. And I wasn't quite sure where he was coming from, but he was a really interesting person. And the song pretty much explained itself.
I see. Well, did you meet this person in Austin, or was this in the D.C. area?
No, this was actually in Cleveland. When I was working on the Mohawk Comb Over CD.
I see. Well, then this would be from the very early days before you wrote a lot of before the, you decided to even do this CD. Then that was pre even an idea that it would end up on a CD.
Well, I mean, all of these things were actually recorded before I actually thought I was going to release the CD, which is probably a good thing because I didn't censor anything when I was writing this. I didn't worry about what other people would think, which is a very good thing because you don't censor your the lyrics or the music. You just kind of do what sounds right to you and not worry if somebody's going to raise their eyebrows at one of the lines.
Well, I think that's a great gift to the whole CD because it certainly has a completely free feeling that there was it's as it is, as opposed to any sort of calculated impact. They're really very frank and honest tracks. Bob, let's roll number five. Then it's called "I Want a Buddy."
I used to whore around and stay out all night. Those days are long gone now, it wouldn't feel right, 'cause I found a buddy who became much more than a friend. I was so happy, I just thought it would never end. On Sunday mornings he'd get breakfast in bed. I'd never choke when I was giving him head. His head lay on my chest when the day was done. I didn't know how soon his time would come. I've been alone now for a couple of years. My buddy left and left me nothing but tears. He's up in heaven now, I'm still stuck down here. I want someone again, someone who call me dear. I don't go out on Saturday nights to those cruise bars, they frighten me. I met you through a mutual friend who's been dead a quarter century. Talked of artists and of music we like. You asked me if I'd come to dinner some night. I told you sure I would, next time I'm passing through. I want a buddy, I want a man perhaps like you. All right. Salmon that was out of this world. You told me what it was you liked in a girl. We played some music and we stayed up and talked till two.
I want a buddy, I want a man somewhat like you. I don't go out on Saturday nights to those cruise bars, they frighten me. I met you through a mutual friend who's been dead a quarter century. I had a fine time, hope I'll see you again. It might just be that we've each found a new friend. Of course, I could be wrong. That wouldn't be something new. Still, I want a buddy. I want a man somewhat like you. I want a buddy, I want a man who wants me to. I want a buddy, I want a man, what can I do?
You know, that's a great track, and it's interesting to me, some of the music that we played that you wrote more recently, it's an earlier track, but it has a very clean, honest feel about it. In fact, one of the chatters has referred to it as being a shuffle. How would you characterize that track?
Oh, geez, I don't know. Sort of it's more of an old timey sort of sound to it than the other ones, I guess.
Yeah,
I have a real hard time pigeonholing any of these things into any kind of genre because I've been exposed to so many different types of music. You know, different things seep into different tracks, and pigeonholing is real difficult for me.
Well, I'm glad you're having the same problem I had, because in listening to the music, and I've heard most of the tracks, except for maybe one or two, and I thought to myself, Peter, how in the hell are you going to explain this? How are you going to introduce Peter? Because it's all over the map. I have no idea how to. Finally, I decided to call it gay folk. For lack of any other description. Don, tell us again how the folks can find these CDs.
They can go to CD Baby, and I believe you can go to cdbaby.com /CD/ Don Harvey. Or you can go to cdbaby.com, and they have a search engine there. You can either put in Don Harvey, or you can put in Good, Clean, Fun, the title of the CD.
And can they also locate the music by going to your MySpace page?
Yes, there's a link on my MySpace page to CD Baby.
Great, great. Well, as time goes by, and a lot of the listeners actually listen to this show on a delayed basis. Many people are doing other things in the evening, and so we have a lot of listeners who will listen to this later, and for them, there are links to Don Harvey's MySpace page and the Strictly Confidential calendar. Don, we're running short in the evening, but we do have time for one short track if we keep it to one of the shorter ones. Tell us about Leather Armband Song. Now, that's a 2:38 track. I think will fit in nicely.
Yeah, that was a song that I wrote after reading personal ads and being just sort of turned off by how restrictive people were in what they were looking for in a partner. I mean, all the ways that they would eliminate people from being potential mates.
It's
a very tongue-in-cheek look, and it's from the point of view from somebody who's pretty snotty.
Yeah. It's almost as if they're looking for a particular make and model down to the serial number, isn't it?
Right. It's really a song about rejecting people.
Well, let's have a listen to it. It's called the Leather Armband Song, track 7, Bob. I think it'll fit right in.
Have a leather armband, I just don't think I've much to say. If you don't have a leather armband, don't talk to me, 'cause I'll look the other way. If you don't have at least
8 inches.
I've got my standards. Well, can't you see?
If you don't have at least 8 inches.
I'm sorry, boy, you're not man enough for me. Bother me, do I need to be more clear?
If you're not bulked up from the gym, man.
Okay, I'll say it, you look too much like a queer.
I said you better be straight acting,
'cause if you're not, I just won't play.
I said you better be straight acting,
'cause I'm a dude who only happens to be gay.
And that really is the mindset, isn't it? I just happen to be gay and I have my standards. Well done, Don. And Don, thank you so much for joining us this evening. You've been a remarkable guest, and we've certainly enjoyed talking with you. Thank you for taking so much time with us this evening.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with you, and thank you for playing the music.
We've all enjoyed it. I assure you, we've all enjoyed it. And good evening to you. I'll be sure that you get a link to the audio archive.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Good night. Folks, that was Don Harvey with his new CD, Good Clean Fun. We're pushing close to the end of the show, so I have to wrap it very quickly. Love you guys. Back tomorrow with the Just Us Show. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.